Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are, delayed today because of internet problems, actually, in the Florida area, which apparently were not explained by anybody.
I'm telling you, I think it was a radiation poisoning of the internet. It's starting.
Today's day, by the way, is March 23rd, the first day of his insanity.
And we can use it. No, I don't think so. I got to tell you, though, already, one day late. You know how many emails I got? Where's the show?
Two.
We'll tell you. We got a few. We got about five or six. Let me tell you something, gang. When and if we decide to stop with this ridiculous weekly show, we will tell you. Right, John? We'll give them fair warning.
Yeah, we'll give you a one-week warning and we're done.
Yeah, that's it. Off kaput. But we're not going to just leave you hanging under any circumstances. So all of you that obviously stick by your iTunes on Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever day it may be that you download and you're ready for that because you've got to get your John and Andrew fix, never fear. We will be around. And if it's a few days late or a week late, there's something, we'll get you.
Yeah, we always show up. Eventually.
Always show up. Eventually. So I thought I'd start. Let me just start the show off with one thing, John, because it's kind of running down. We only have 2 weeks left to fund, if you will, the gifting for the Jason Taylor Foundation. And we've collected a decent amount of money, actually. And I was hoping that we can, you know, jog somebody's giving spirits out there. It's a great foundation, a wonderful charity where young people who maybe don't have the opportunity are given the opportunity, and they are taught some reading, the reading room. There's also after-school activities and all. You know, it's really a good thing for underprivileged kids, and Jason Taylor is a great guy. You may know him from Dancing with the Stars and New York Jets and all that. Great guy raising money to help out others. And if we can enlist you to give $50 or $100 if you like the show, that would be great. $100 gets you it's like NPR here. $100 gets you a signed book and a reservation for John's book when he comes out on the cycles eventually. Okay? How's that, John?
It's a book that comes out on cycles. I'm waiting for the cycle.
Yeah, you need the cycle. So he's got the 200-year cycle, unfortunately, he's stuck in. But you get a signed book from me, and it would really mean a lot to me if you could just give a few bucks. Go over to DH Unplugged. There's a little link there that says, hey, donate here, and you can pay by credit card and all that. And thank you very much. That's it.
That should do it. They should be rolling in dough shortly.
Yep, and we're not going to be around starting next week. No, just kidding. Just kidding. All right, what do you want to talk about?
Well, there's a bunch of stuff. I mean, we obviously have the new war. Mm-hmm. Although we'll be out in a few days, not a few weeks, as Obama said, which, of course, was a few days ago. I think he said that on Saturday. So a few days, Saturday, Sunday. We're getting to a week.
Aren't we supposed to be out of Afghanistan already?
Well, both Iraq and Afghanistan, but that's not going to happen.
So we've succumbed to the fact that what is said may not actually happen.
You know, I'm still irked about the fact that I have potholes out here on the freeway that is near my house, and they're dropped 100 million? Oh, no, 10, well, how much did you see? 600,000? I guess it was close to $50 million, $60 million in cruise missiles they shot off, which could have been used to fix the potholes, but
yeah, let's do a quick search of what is the cost of a Tomahawk missile.
I think you'll come up with $650,000 for one missile.
There's a lot of money on this. What is that? One. Let's see. Budget prices. How much? Oh, here we go. So how much has been sent so far? And you know, I have to get the one page they want me to pay for. The U.S. Navy fact file, approximately $569 million, I guess.
For what?
Right? I don't know. I'm looking at what this is. Oh, this is the program of the thing. How much does each Tomahawk missile cost? Okay. So this says that the cost of each Tomahawk missile is about $569. No, that's not right. It's $62 million. $62 million was the cost of the 110.
Yeah,
you could fill a few potholes. They're making potholes. You want them filled?
And then we lost a jet, an F-15. Those things aren't cheap. What was that? What's an F-15 sell for?
an F-15. This is much bigger.
Not to say that the just flying around isn't costing a mint.
Right. Okay, $30 million.
$30 million. Okay, that's what I thought they cost. So $30 million for an F-15. So it's 30. We spent $100 million already. I still have potholes out here in California.
I mean, you could probably get a used F-15 for maybe 27.
I don't think they sell them. Well, maybe they do. They sell them to third world countries. You're on your own.
Yeah, exactly. It is a problem because you have to wonder, first of all, what were the targets of those 110? Second of all, you know, if it's amazing because now in Libya, they said to be turning on the civilians even more so in almost a protest. And you have to just question, how are we going to do this without any kind of ground intervention? It boggles my mind how that's possible.
Well, and more importantly, for this show at least, what does it mean for the market? Are there buying opportunities, selling opportunities? Is the market going to go up, down, or in between? It seems to be going up after everything's shaken out, but the cost of energy is going to go up. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this doesn't seem like to be a positive thing in any way.
I can give you a laundry list of things today and yesterday, we'll just say this week, that should have been easy, and maybe even individually, problem areas for the market. You have the price of oil clipping 106 today. You have the uprisings around the world, and in Syria is a new one. You have the concern over Bahrain and all that. You have Israel. There was a bomb exploded in Jerusalem, killed one woman and injured a lot more. There was the continuation of the Libya situation, obviously. You have Portugal was on the edge of what was going to go on. We'll talk about that in a moment. We have radiation leakage and clouds forming all over the place. And that's just to mention that, not to mention the horrible housing numbers that we saw today. Horrible, the worst since records began of housing, new housing sales of...
Starts
since 1963.
Yeah. Well, every time you see a big hole in the starts, like that goes down that far, it usually has a pretty phenomenal rebound. I'm guessing, and I might even think about looking for a company that I think can make it through, and stay in business, to put on the on our stock portfolio.
Yeah, you like KB Homes or Hunvavian or Toll Brothers. Toll Brothers is more the high end, but KBH, you want to pick probably the worst one that has no shot, because that's the one that usually gets, if something happens positive, it just blows up in a good way. So that's KBH is one example of that.
We'll take a look at the chart in a little while.
Yep. So now there's all this going on, and and the big issue, don't forget, is with Libya, and I have a question that I just don't understand. What is with France? Boy, they got a escargot up there, Tokis, on Libya, huh?
Well, that's because apparently Libya, according to one of the sons, Ishmael or whatever his name, Israel, he jumped on Sarkozy because apparently Libya financed the Sarkozy election in one way, shape, or form, and he bitched about it. He says, who's France to be jumping on us when we made it possible for that guy to even become who he is? And he says, we're going to reveal all the documents if this keeps up. And so France freaked out and says, we better blow these guys to smithereens before that comes out. That's the only thing that's possible.
It is.
And also the second thing is, of course, is that they're worried about all these refugees going somehow, getting into France. They got enough of a refugee problem. They don't need any more.
Yeah, because France is not known for their aggressive first-in stance by any means.
Well, not recently.
No.
Since
Napoleon.
Well, since World War I, actually.
But still, I'm saying they're usually, sitting back and do what French do.
Well, that's because they, after Napoleon and World War I and, then having an issue with their idiotic Maginot Line in World War II. I mean, they finally said, what's the point?
You know what? I just tied something together. I'm tying two shows together here. You ready? Last show, we talked about how the U.S. just overtook France as the largest importer and drinker of wines. They're probably all drying out over there and freaking out. You know what I'm saying?
These guys need to have a few drinks. They'd be a little more aggressive. They're not drinking and they're getting mean. That's what it is.
Yeah, I'm saying they're getting all shaky and all messed up. They don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right. That could be it.
The kick of the dog. I mean, really.
They should get back on the wine.
Yeah, exactly. So a couple of things on G7. There was finally a coordinated intervention attempt, or at least acknowledgement, by the Group of Seven, the big boys. And, you know, the yen touched 76 per dollar just for a moment there. And then all of a sudden they got this intervention with, you know, talk and with money behind it. The yen goes to 82. And now it's back to 80.5 or so.
The yen just wants to go up for some reason. It's going to kill the Japanese if it goes up any higher.
It's a real problem, this repatriation trade, where they're bringing money back to possibly pay for this $300 to $400 billion worth of cleanup and rebuild. And the fact that you know, they're banking on the idea that the yen is going to, you know, continue seeing this kind of pressure for a while. If you look back on a chart on the yen, I mean, it has fallen 30-something% in the last, you know, 10 years. I think it is. It's ridiculous. I mean, I don't think it's 10 years. I think it's 5 years. I was looking at. It felt like 30, or I should say, climbed 30%.
Yeah,
climbed 30%. Which means that against the dollar, which means that how competitive can they be?
They must be taking a beating on the Toyotas or the cars they make over there, which are the Priuses and the Lexuses, for example, and some various cars from the other companies. And they're trying to maintain price points that are competitive, but they have to. They're 30% over on cost because of the exchange rate. I mean, this has got to be. If they're breaking even, it's going to be a miracle if they want to, or they're just not going to sell any cars. I mean, I've been looking at Japanese cars recently, and some of them are overpriced.
Yeah, but there's about to be a shortage, so if you want something, get on.
Yeah. Well, that'll make them even more expensive.
You have the problem of not only are they shut down many of these factories right now in Japan, and just a week shutdown, a one-week shutdown, you know how much that costs a company. But then you add to the fact that suppliers are having trouble, and it keeps on adding up and adding up, so the companies are just...
Well, I watched the films and tapes and videos of the earthquake situation and the tsunami in particular. So actually, I've been going to the beach in San Francisco every day and waiting for one of the cars to float up over onto the beach.
Yep, one of these days.
There's
right?
got to be a bunch of those cars out at sea, it seems to me. They found a couple of houses in the middle of the ocean. But those
if found, please return to Toyota.
The cars have got to be floating all over the place.
Yeah, that would be some scene, huh? You know, I had a discussion today for this week's Discipline Investor podcast, and I thought that it would be kind of cool to bring on a specialist in the area of radiation and nuclear energy, because there's so much misinformation that I have. I'm sure everybody else is scratching their head out there going, what in the world is going on? This is much radiation here, and the water supply is now tainted with radioactive iodine, and this is going into the ocean, and you know, all this stuff. So I brought in this professor, with the lead guy over at University of Michigan in nuclear studies, etc. And basically, you know, his commentary also was that, you know, first of all, there's a lack of information. Second point is that there's a lot of misinformation. And third of all, even so, with the readings they have now, it's still not at a dangerous point. I don't know when it gets dangerous, but I laid this on him. I said, you know, if I can say, you're going to probably be asked into a lot of meetings and a lot of discussions about the future of nuclear energy, and I have an idea that could really make your career. But I'm not going to take credit for it, I told him. This is the deal. Next time you build a nuclear facility, don't put it in a zone that is totally prone to earthquakes regularly, right on the edge of the ocean where there may be a tsunami. If you measure the distance between where the nuclear plant is with all the reactors and the water, it's less than a mile. It's like a tenth or 0.15 of a mile. And if you look at an overlay of the earthquakes that have happened historically, that zone is ridiculous. It is amazing amounts of earthquakes that happen there.
Yeah. Well, the whole Pacific
Rim.
Inland,
you know, like Montana. Just put it somewhere inland. And then run a long cable.
You know, power transmission lines work.
Yeah.
There's not that, you know, how many people live on the precarious coast anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's a good piece of advice. So what else we got?
Well, let me just finish this. So this is a piece of the information that we're getting. You know, Tokyo, the headline reads, Tokyo Electric Power Company workers begin restoring power to the crippled nuclear plant in northern Japan as government tests show radiation has leaked into the sea and tainted some food. That's what you get. So they began restoring the power. So everybody's thinking, oh, that's great, because the coolant mechanisms inside of there are what the power is needed for. Right? That's what we think. But the fact is the coolant mechanisms are the most important, and we're not finding out if they're working or not. We just know the lights are on inside. We don't even know if the coolers are working at all.
Right.
and you're still getting some blasts and little fires and little explosions. And, you know, this number four reactor that has all the spent nuclear rods in there is an amazing amount of potential problems there. So who knows? I mean, we'll just end it on that. I mean, the fact is that we have this situation. It's causing a lot of uncertainty. People are starting to freak out. The Tokyo water is off limits now. They're passing out boiled water. Which, by the way, they
What good is boiled water? You have to have distilled.
Yeah, they have it, but they did it in a microwave.
And what does that do?
Radiation water in a microwave. It seems to, like, double it, it seems, right? You would think, right?
So I'm looking at Tokyo Electric Power, the stock.
Oh, boy.
So it's an interesting chart. It was at, it's floating around 28. You know, I think when it before the incident, it was at 25. Then it crashed down to, like, 8. It's actually made a comeback to 1320 as of today. And it seems to me, I don't know, am I wrong in thinking this might not be a bad short?
I mean, it's down 50% in 1 year. Year to date, it's down, 53% already. 45% already.
Yeah, so if it goes down to, if it goes broke because of this incident, because they may have to, you know, have to deal with the cost, some sort of, I don't know what kind of lawsuits or liability there is in Japan, but it seems to me that the place might shutter, so they don't have to deal with it, and that would make the stock, what, zero?
You would think so.
Except for assets, book value? What's the book value? Let's see.
Well, no, now, to take, no, whatever the book value is, forget about it, because you're now going to put liabilities against it.
Right, so it would be, yeah, academic, right, the book value would all go to the liability, so it's zero.
Right.
So is this a short, you think?
You know, potentially it's a short.
I think I'm going to put it on our chart, whatever. This is going to be...
Which symbol are you looking at?
Well, I'm looking at TKECF.PK, which is probably, it's the pinks.
Yeah, the pink sheets. It was down 12% today, about 79,000 shares traded.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. I was thinking that would be the one.
Yeah. That one, they can't be. I mean, you'll see a lot of volatility there. The only thing about that is we're going to have to put a wider stop on that because you could have a 20% up day. So we have to put a little bit of a wider stop on this.
Yeah, okay. We can do that.
Okay. And the other thing is that this company already has been found to be lying historically.
Yeah, this is good. This is good for the short.
Right. They've definitely been lying about a lot of all sorts of nonsense. So let me, let's see if I can do this. I'm going to copy this so that we can put it on the list a little bit later on. And that's good. Okay. Let's see. What else is there? Okay. All right. That's good. Crude hits 106 today.
Yeah.
But all these economists are saying it's not going to slow down the economy.
How does that make any sense to you?
It doesn't.
Okay. As long as it doesn't make sense to you, because it doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, if you say that, finally, Morgan Stanley did come out with a note today that said that the Japan situation is going to cut about 0.5% out of global GDP. That's a pretty big number. So it's going to be down to like 3.5 or something like that, they say. But you would think that crude at 106 has to slow down the economy, or at least, you know, give and take from somewhere. And then the situation in Japan has to slow down the economy. That's not a big deal. It's not going to derail things. But you know what? If that's not going to derail things, what is going to derail things? I can't even imagine. It doesn't make any sense.
Really?
It doesn't make any sense.
No. That's the great thing about this situation. Nothing makes sense.
Well, what's great about being an economist is you can't be really wrong because you keep on adjusting your numbers.
Right. And you can also adjust your theory.
Right, exactly. Oh, all of a sudden, this is an unknown event. But, you know, I think his name is Nilsson Taleb. He wrote this book called Black Swan, right? You know, the Black Swan.
You should have to, if you get a chance, anybody out there, go to YouTube or Google videos and listen to some of his speeches. They're quite entertaining.
Yeah. These are like multiple black swans happening all at the same time. Right? We have the uprisings in the Middle East. We have the breakdown of the euro and all that. Well, that's been going on for a while, but still. We have the earthquake and tsunami is clearly a black swan, right? I mean, these are all kind of percolating at the same time.
Yeah, anomalies.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And then you have the Egyptian stock market just opened for the first time for trading since February 27th.
How did it do?
Didn't do well.
Didn't do well.
Closed limit down, which is about 10% off. They wouldn't let it get down more than 10% off. The problem is that if you were a fund manager, a hedge fund, or an individual that had any stock investments there, you're sitting there from February 27th till now saying, what's my stuff worth? The second thing is that if they didn't open yesterday, the Morgan Stanley Capital International MSCI indices would have automatically excluded them from the index, thereby anybody that was investing in an investment style like that with the MSCI index as a benchmark would have to close those positions, would really crash their market.
Oh, yeah.
So they were forced
to open. Oh, so that's why they – okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, they didn't want to open, but they did.
Right. Otherwise, everybody would be scrambling.
Yep, exactly. So they would be taking out more money than they actually took out. So right now, the special rules on selling, a shortened day, a 10% downside, all this good stuff. And so we'll see what happens in the next number of days. You know, Japan went down, 20% in a number of days, and then it popped up 5, 6, 7, 8%. Then it came down 2% last night. Everybody's, looking at, it's down. So that's the big ticket right now, right? The big play. It's down. We'll buy it because it's going to eventually go up, no matter what it is. How bad can it get? We've seen it lower. No, seriously, that's kind of what's going on with the mentality. I mean, Japan was basically the lowest it's been in years. It almost, brought it down to where it was at the lowest point of the crisis of the financials.
Yeah.
Crazy. So, well. The leading stocks of the last few weeks have been getting just totally trashed. You look at the big name, good quality stocks, they just, off and off and off. Some things like a Baidu are doing very well. They're at an all-time high. Netflix got totally smacked for a while. Then all of a sudden, after it starts rising, Jim Cramer proclaims that, gang, get your hands on Netflix.
Nah.
Because Verizon or AT&T is going to be, or maybe even Apple is going to buy this company, and it's worth definitely double what it's worth today. So, of course, it's in the
that numbers don't make any sense whatsoever. That rationale is bull crap. He's trying to get out.
Maybe. But why? What's the biggest? I mean, I like Netflix, the model and all that. But why would Apple? I mean, I thought this a long time ago that it was possible. But the longer the time that goes on, the less likely it is that Apple will buy Netflix, in my opinion, because Apple will build up their own streamable library.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, why would they want it? They're not going to want a distribution.
It's not like a – right. They don't need – I mean, insofar as a lot of these mergers are make-buy decisions, right? So somebody says, we can do it ourselves or we can buy this, and what would it cost to do it ourselves? And then you factor in the customer base because those are valuable people. Oh, how much is a customer worth? Oh, I don't know. I think they're worth $10. I think they're worth $20. I think they're worth $100, which I've seen. And then they factor that in, it would cost too much, and then we get all these new customers, even though many of them would flock to Apple because it's Apple. I don't see how Apple wouldn't do the make.
It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. And AT&T is not going to buy them, and AT&T just swallowed a giant company.
They're hoping to. And the other question is, what major companies has Apple ever bought?
No, I'm not aware of any. They buy little bitties and utilize all of their technical abilities. They bought something recently, but it was an online advertising deal, like Mobi or AdMob or something like that. They bought one of them. But no, I agree. They haven't really bought anything of significance that has a name.
Right, and they're not going to buy this at an outrageous price.
Right. Makes no sense. So I don't know where he's going with this.
He's trying to dump it.
Jim Cramer? Oh, please. No, couldn't be, could it?
Anything's possible.
You remember last month?
Does he have Netflix in his trust?
I don't know. We could probably look that up. I'm sure that somewhere he had to disclose that sometime.
Yeah, usually mentions it.
Yeah. Do you remember that a few months ago that everything that was going on that was bad was blamed on the weather? The weather.
Yeah.
Well, good news. The weather is fine. But now we get to blame everything on Japan.
Yeah.
So Adobe announced earnings. Yep, about time. Right. Just right in time for the next round. Adobe announced the earnings yesterday after the close. They matched on the EPS and revenues, better margins. But they guided down significantly because of Japan. Now, Adobe is a software company, right?
Yeah.
So what parts are they getting from Japan?
I have no idea. I guess they're selling Photoshop to the Japanese. I don't know. And I don't know why, with the Japanese yen being the way it is, it wouldn't increase Adobe sales because it makes the Adobe products cheaper.
What do they ship? It's more like it's downloaded.
Well, they do ship product. They do ship a lot of boxes.
something awry about the blaming their Well, I should say that it is possible that Japan's slowdown right now, what's going on, is going to affect their sales in Japan, right? Okay, I'll give you that. But then again, that flies right in the face of the economists who say that it's not going to slow down the economy, that any of this stuff is going to slow down the economy. I mean, it's a good thing that Adobe didn't announce that, you know, it was because of oil prices. That would really be far out.
Yeah, you know, it's possible.
It's possible.
You can make any excuse you want.
Right.
Adobe is probably, I don't know how many months away they are from Creative Suite 6, but they seem...
How could they improve on what they have? I still have like 4 and it's fantastic.
Oh yeah, 4 is fantastic. 4 began the fantastic era. I think 4 is, I mean, 1 was interesting, it was usable, 2 was okay. 3 was started to flex their, you know, a little, getting a little fancier, and then 4 is extremely nice, and then 5 is not really that much. I mean, 4 or 5, I don't think it's a big deal. They're both pretty similar. But what's gotten me kind of enthused, and I think I've written about it, is that they've done a really good job with products like Dreamweaver, for example, mm-hmm. to make it easier than ever to actually throw up a pretty advanced-looking website.
Without total templating it.
Right. I mean, it's just like it's become a lot easier, and the what you see is what you get works a lot better. If you take a look at the early versions of Dreamweaver, unless you were a working pro designer that used it on a daily basis, mm-hmm. you'd never be able to use it.
You know, that just reminded me that I do not have – I just thought of this. On this new Mac I have, I did not port over my Adobe Suite. You know, if I have to use that, I haven't used it in a while, but if I do need to do a little brush up on something and edit, have to look into that. I will have to.
Well, you can move it over from your other machine, and then it may show up when they, because they audit.
Right.
And then you have to call them and say, well, my other machine blew up, and this is, I moved it, and they'll give you another code. Usually it works.
You know who's really very liberal with that? I have Microsoft products. I
mean, Microsoft's very liberal with it.
Wow. I mean, I just say that I'm moving it to another. I'm moving it to a laptop, or my laptop. I'm replacing it, and they just give you new codes.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah, no, I've done that a couple times. I'm actually stunned, and it's not only that, but it's a no questions asked. If you have a legitimate copy,
right,
to begin with, and you want to move it to some other machine, or you want to, change your hardware or whatever underneath it, and you have to reload the thing from scratch on an alien machine that's going to tell Microsoft that you're not, that it looks like a bootleg. You just explain to them what happened on the phone, and they say, oh, okay, and they give you a code on the spot, and then that's it. You're done.
But they had something called the, I think it was called the Action Pack. You know about this?
No.
It's a developer pack. For $300, you get all of their software. And you get multiple install codes for almost like 10 installs for their Office Enterprise, and 10 installs for this and a server. And I mean, it's an unbelievable $300. It's unbelievable.
So you bought that?
I bought that a couple of years ago, and I had, when I was installing some server things and all that. And for $300, you get, I mean, when I say everything, I mean everything. You have to go. It's not easy to find. I don't know if they still do it, but if you look up the Action Pack from Microsoft, and if you are a developer, or you know, of course, we have some development we do in our financial.
Actually, you do.
Yeah. you get the Action Pack. It's quite the deal. Quite the deal. So I would recommend that highly.
That would pay for the price of admission to our show if anybody out there takes advantage of that.
Exactly. So anyway, Adobe was down about 5% on that guidance. We'll see where it goes from here. But they were a little bit miffed. Again, they did a nice job on their margins, and they did a nice job. Other companies got a whiff of what happened, and they came out with earnings today and after that, and they didn't say a thing. They said, we're not sure about Japan yet. So that didn't really hurt stocks.
So basically, Adobe threw the Japanese red herring out there. It screwed them, and so everybody else backed away. We're not going to do the Japanese thing.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Probably. I'm thinking that's what's going to happen now. You know, that happens a lot of times when governments are testing out little ideas and, you know, talking about, we're thinking about supporting the yen and see how that flies and what happens in the markets. And then all of a sudden, you know, when it, if it works, it doesn't work. They change tactics and all that. But unfortunately, Adobe only gets one shot at it. Hmm. One shot. Oh, well. What else is going on? Let's see. Let's see. I talked about... Okay, some important levels. Oh, this was interesting. So a lot of people, you know, looking at the various market indices and looking at, you know, where is the make or break point in these markets? Is it going up? Is it going down? It's kind of floundering in between right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the... I sent you a link here. There's a... says the important... It's on the top there. The important levels to watch. See that? Delicious links. I'm going to put that right now. It's DH Unplugged. Delicious slash, I guess, DH Unplugged. And I am going to...
as you load these pages, you're breaking up.
Oh. Okay. How's that better?
Yeah.
No, I'm not loading. Okay. So if you look at the S&P 500 and you look at where that is, this is as of yesterday. It was up a little bit today. 1309 on the upside is the start of a new upward trend, if it can actually break through there. Right now, if you notice, the teal or the blue line and the purple line, see that the blue line is starting to come through the purple line?
Yeah, it looks like a green line on my monitor.
Okay, you need to adjust your monitor. But aside from that, what you're seeing, and you can click this and we'll enlarge it, but what you're seeing is that the 20-day moving average is moving down through the 50-day moving average, which is a negative sign. In other words, momentum on the short term is starting to clip lower, and that's a negative situation. And you're also seeing that it's having a hard time getting through that upper level of 1309, and that's a clear support point or a resistance point right now. In addition, it's staying below its 50-day, even though it was up a bit today, it couldn't get past 1300. One of the things that caused some of the problem towards the end of the day where it knocked off about 20 or 30 basis points was the Caterpillar announcement that they're reaffirming their guidance, but they didn't really show anything substantial in there, and it wasn't really a great guidance figure that they showed. It was kind of on the lean side. So Caterpillar is a big part of, you know, the S&P and the Dow. So that kind of knocks some things down. So you have to look at the 1309 number and then 1331 as some important levels of, if you're thinking about shorting this market, to be careful of. Clearly, it has to move beyond the 50-day, which is like at 50-day is 1304 right now. The Russell 2000 has been very strong. This is small caps. You have to look at the 814. I think it closed at about 811 or 810 today. And it's just kind of hanging in there, still not getting above its resistance point on our algorithms that we put together. And so you could kind of still say that it's really doesn't have a lot of conviction. It may move up. And the NASDAQ just looks awful. It's nowhere near anything. Now, the contrarian would say, well, I'm going to buy the NASDAQ because it's down more. It's really not keeping pace. The short sellers say, you know what? The NASDAQ is extremely weak. It's showing a lot of weak tendencies right here, and it's very vulnerable. I would encourage everybody to check out these charts and look at the level. I mean, they kind of caught back a little bit of wind, and then we came out after hours with Red Hat seemed to have done a good job with their earnings. We'll see how it plays out tomorrow. It was up like 10% after hours, and Micron Technologies was up a bit after hours as well. So we'll see what's happening there. And then there's a couple others that got kind of smacked around a little bit. But I think there's a lot of negativity towards many of the chip companies, et cetera, and they're looking out again towards Japan because of the supply issues and looking at what that's going to...
So what window you got opening? Because you've been breaking up consistently since you opened that the chart. Okay, so let's...
Let me go to the documents here. Okay, I got it.
Since we're having so much trouble on the Skype, we're going to wrap it up by going to the stock charts.
Yep.
And
we're on a secondary line. My three, thank goodness for the iPhone, the 3G on the iPhone.
Hmm. Well, so long that lasts. all right, so we're looking at our DH Unplugged weekly stocks. Not a lot of action on the upside.
Yeah, it's been kind of a downstream right now in the market. You know, you see a lot of distribution going on the buying side. There hasn't been a lot of movement on, you know, towards volume. So that's a real problem, except for maybe some earnings here or there. But the big days on volume have been on the down days, and that's always a concern.
Yeah. So we'll just say that it's pretty stagnant. I think Metro PCS looks the best, and mm-hmm. which makes sense. And
yep.
My General Motors short is hanging in there.
Yep.
And your Sina.
Yeah, Sina's looking really good. It's at close to a buy point here, if not at a buy point. again, where it's breaking out here. But the problem is the markets are in a little bit of a downturn, so you have to be very careful with that because things can turn very quickly. So that's why I'm adding a short this week, GE, General Electric.
Okay. It's at 19.
So I'm going to put that. Yeah. And I you want to put in a short?
Yeah, what was mine was the Tokyo Power.
Yeah, I think I have that.
And can we take a quick look at the KB Homes chart?
Oh, yeah.
And see if there's anything there I want to do.
KBH.
So it looks like a distinct downtrend.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. But the, what's this, the 20, which one am I looking at here? I'm looking at the, what line is this, the blue line? That, I'm looking at the weeklies, since you, and I've changed the, I think the, I'm looking at the simple 20-day, which is, looks like it's turning up.
Let's take a look here. I'm looking at the 10-week and the 20-week. 10-week is clear. The 50-day is really sharply moving down. But the week, which is the 200-day moving average, where it's been holding for some time, it came down below that for a while. And surprisingly, even after these horrific, horrible numbers, I guess they figure people thinking it can't get any worse than this. And it's got to be the only thinking that's out there.
Yeah. The stock is actually priced higher than I would expect.
Yeah. The other one is there's a couple of other ones in this area. Let me take a look here. Let's take a look at KBH. The ones you can look at are also, let's say a cheaper one here. Beazer Homes, BZH, a real problem, $4.50.
BZH.
And Hunvavian.
That thing's been as low as 25 cents within recent memory.
Yeah, that one's had a lot of, one of the weaker ones due to their books.
But it's like it's pretty steady.
Dying.
Well, it looks steady to me from the weekly chart.
And Hovavian is H-O-V.
H-O-V.
It looks like, if you look at the weekly chart on Hovavian, it does look like it has, it looks awful, but it looks like it has some support here. You know, at this level, at the 350 level or so, 360. See, all the way back, you can look back into 2010 also. It really hasn't breached that level.
Yeah, it looks like dead money.
Yeah. It looks terrible. I mean, these are the ones that will do something if anything happens here. And it will turn up sharply, but then you have to kind of run away from it and move out of it. They all look awful.
Yeah, okay, I'll skip it for this week. I'll think about it.
Good choice. All right, so we're going to wrap it up. And like I said, I hope everybody can contribute to the Jason Taylor Foundation. And check out DH Unplugged. We'll have all the links on the site. By the way, I think we should mention that none of the things we're talking about are recommendations to buy or sell any security. Do your own homework. This is not a recommendation. This is not a suggestion. The only thing that we're doing is having a little fun here and talking about some reasons and some education why it could be or why not some of these positions could be interesting to take a look at.
It's an exercise.
We have two shorts this week, TECO and GE.
Okay, we'll get a better connection next Tuesday. We'll do the show again then, and hopefully, unless you're – I would be calling my provider immediately. And until then, we'll chat maybe during the week, but Tuesday for sure.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.